This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane. From time to time, we bring you stories from This American Life, a new public radio program produced at WBEZ in Chicago. The show got some happy news earlier this month. It just received a prestigious Peabody Award. This American Life tells stories in fresh and unexpected ways. They invite writers, reporters, and performers to contribute pieces based on a theme, and they produce documentaries on a wide range of topics. On occasion, they discover stories in found tape recordings, tape that was never intended for the radio, but is still revealing in the way the best radio documentary tape can be. It's what they call an accidental documentary. Such a tape was found in a Salvation Army thrift store in Michigan by a man named Joe Solovsky. It was recorded around 1967. Here's Ira Glass, the host of This American Life.
The tape that Joe Solovsky found is from 1967. It came in one of those boxes. I don't know if you remember these kind of boxes that reel-to-reel tape came in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And it fits 2 hours of tape. It's not that big. It's like 9-inch reel of tape, 2 hours of tape. And the box had stamps all over it and addresses written and crossed out and written. And what it was a letter on tape between this family in Michigan, the Davis family, and their son, Arthur Jr., who is in medical school in Loma Linda, California. And the tape is interesting because it documents pretty thoroughly life in this one American family.
Hello, son. There isn't much news. Grace was over one day, and she was feeling so bad about her marital situation, so I gave her this reality therapy book. And by the way, I sent you one, son. You'll be getting it in the mail soon. I had it sent right direct to you. It isn't that I think you need it. It's just a new insight on mental health, mental illness, that I think is good. I probably told you about the chapter I read to Jimmy when I was going, we were writing to Mrs. Lester's voice lesson, and it was the chapter on nagging. Smart wives don't have to nag. It was so interesting. As I got through it, I realized that this was written for me, because I do nag quite a bit. And here it brought out that sometimes a person nags because they want to feel superior, and each time I'll read it, son. If you stop to think about it, you know perfectly well that this sort of nagging, that means nagging to get things done and things, isn't correcting the evil of which you complain. It's only making you feel important, virtuous, and superior. So for goodness sake, find some more constructive way of enhancing your feeling of virtue if it's so badly in need of being enhanced. Daddy has been very, very busy working in the basement. One of the machines is broken down. And true to form, it's taken him a long, long time to fix it. We're behind as usual on strips. Jack goofed, I guess, in his order of extrusions. And we are out of extrusions and won't be having them until Friday. I made $50 in 1 week and a half. That's what I bought your suit with and paid my tithe and things like this. Well, son, I'll say goodbye. But thank you for your words of advice as far as my resting, and thank you for being concerned about my welfare. I really have gotten along quite well recently. I didn't feel too bad of depression last month. Well, here I go. We'll see you again, and I'll let someone else talk on the tape. Bye-bye.
Hello, Joe. I like this big tape, anyhow. Isn't this pretty neat? I don't know if we'll ever get the thing filled up, and if we do get it filled up, I don't know whether you'll ever have the time to listen to it or not. Things are surely busy around here. They're really popping. I didn't get to bed till after 1 o'clock, though. I was working downstairs. I had to work ready to take up to Jack's today so we could get paid. We don't have any strips right now, though. I guess I get a call for supper, so I'll come back later. I heard a little story that I thought I ought to tell you, Joe. Mom reminded me at the supper table. We just got back from meeting supper. There were a couple out. They were getting acquainted, shall we say. Been doing a little French kissing, and the fellow said, oh, I think I got your gum. And she said, no. She said, I got a bad cold. So I'll leave you with that little thought for the time being. Hi, Joe. I just got through listening to your talking to you on the phone. Little Kenny Jockwa, I don't know if you remember him or not, but he's Clint Jockwa's oldest son. I got married last March. His girlfriend was here in school, and they were intending to keep it quiet until after school was out, but I guess she's pregnant now, so I suppose when you fool around and do things like that, why, I suppose that's the price you put to take. But I guess he's still in the Army. I saw him tonight in the drive-in. They look real happy together. She seems like a real nice little girl, almost too nice for him. He's a real nice fellow, but he's quite mentally retarded, I think. And at least, I don't know, he may not be mentally retarded, but he has an awful time in school trying to figure out his ABCs. And anyway, that's the way it goes, and she seems to be real happy with him. She went with Carl Hamill before, and she seems like a good Christian girl. She's got one hand that's deformed, I suppose. That makes her feel like it'd be awfully hard for her to get anybody, so she probably thought she'd take whatever she could get.
It was interesting as we visited Aunt Minta and Uncle Wendell's this weekend. We just had a real nice time, but I felt a little odd about going and kind of suggested in a very small way that Art ought to call Minta, but sometimes he gets real negative about my suggestions, and I realize that it's because many times I perhaps force myself on him. So I didn't say anything until about 50 miles before we got there. I really felt as though Minta should know we were coming. I should have written and told her, but I've left the communication with his family to Daddy. Well, he got a little bit vexed and jumped out of the car and went to the telephone saying, I hope you're satisfied now. But when he came back, Minta hadn't realized we were coming. And we were all grateful that we'd made the telephone call, even though I didn't want to be right and say I told you so, because it wouldn't have been nice to have walked in on them at 9:45 at night. It was interesting how genuinely they accepted us. I don't know if I could be that gracious or not, although they live such different lives. They had no plans for the weekend. We came, this was fine. We ate what they had, and this was it. But I think of if the situation were reversed and Mint and Wendell dropped in on us, how many times we have company over the weekend, we have to go to functions and we have music lessons and things like this, and our lives are so completely different. It's interesting that we just spend all day sitting without doing anything at all, and this is so unusual for us, and even though I don't suppose I could do it every week, it did seem good for 1 week just to sit and look at each other and talk. Mint and Wendell are sweet people, really. It's very difficult for me not to judge a person's Christian experience. Darlene was voicing her experience last night. Art was a little bit perturbed because her skirt was too short. And Darlene was telling me that really she, in a way, resented Daddy's religion because it seemed to be so void of actual feeling and love. And I felt rather bad this morning. I got up to have my worship. I neglected it over the weekend. And I got up to have my worship. And as I did, Daddy came in and sat down beside me. And I felt rather funny because I really feel he does this as a duty more than anything else. And when I have my worship, I feel communication with God, and I enjoy what I'm reading. And when Daddy came in, there was just a, I don't know, I suppose you'd call it an inner resentment. I didn't know quite what to do. I was right in the middle of reading a chapter. So for the first time in my life, rather than to try to anticipate what he wanted and his needs, I just let him sit there. And I thought if he would say to me, well, could I have worship with you? It would be fine, but he didn't. So I just continued reading and didn't say anything at all. He sat there for a little while, and then he left.
We'll continue with this story from This American Life after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's return to our story from This American Life. It's from a program they call Accidental Documentaries.
Hi, Joe. It was sure nice to hear from you the other night. What I wanted to talk to you about tonight was I wanted to tell you about our power feed. We got the this power feed that I made. We got that going now. So I got a hydraulic cylinder from Bimba. Put that on there and put some micro switches on there. And we, as the thing goes up, pulls the chain around the sprocket.
I think that if Daddy feels a spiritual lack and feels a need, then he himself ought to be the aggressive one and fulfill this need in his own way.
So we put that sprocket on there. And as the cylinder goes in, it pulls the chain that goes around the sprocket, it pulls it up and pushes the drill down.
I would love to begin to have worship with Daddy together as husband and wife.
And then when it gets to the other micro switch, why it comes back, and as it comes back, we've got weights on the other side of the sprocket pulling the chain the other direction.
We certainly have begun to enjoy many relationships that are very, very fulfilling in our marriage. But as far as this worship is concerned, it seems as though I'm always the one that has to make the initiative plunge and say, well, come have worship with me and select things that are inspiring. And I think this is wrong.
But this new compressor works like a dream. It really is doing a good job for us, which makes us very happy. We're real happy with the results we're getting so far.
I was reading an article last week where we so many times try to fit people into our own pattern rather than to understand their background and let them stay in their and appreciate their own pattern. And I think that he ought to fulfill his spiritual needs in his own way.
Ken is going to come over. Ken Schulsky, I don't know if you know him or not, but he does real good at drilling the big holes, so he's going to come over and drill a couple hundred of the strips with the big holes in for us. So we can at least get under production again by tomorrow night.
Because I don't really know the depth of his spirituality and his basic needs.
This one is practically foolproof as long as we don't put too much air pressure on it and drive it too hard.
So because I have no way of knowing, I'm going to stop worrying.
We've been drilling some extrusions, 18-inch extrusions on the press, two holes at a time. It's been going pretty good.
Daddy's calling, so bye-bye, son, and I'll see you later. I just had to tell you, son, Daddy screamed and hollered. You may have heard him over the tape. Honey! And I was right in the middle of a sentence to you, so I didn't go. But when I ran down, here he has this power feed on. You know Daddy, he is very, very slow at what he does, and everyone has about lost their temper at him because they've tried so hard to be patient, and day by day they've hoped this thing gets fixed, and so now I find this morning that he had fixed it, and this John that is working there was sitting there and working this just as easy as could be, and of course everyone was really thrilled. And Daddy was so tickled. He was just as tickled as a little boy, really.
So, son, we love you. We'll see you. I want to save some room here for the old lady love. Good night.
Hello, son. I don't know who's talked.
So, son, we love you. We'll see you. I want to save some room here for your lady love. Good night.
If I had the money, I would have called you tonight. It's funny, when you have an emotional problem, you don't quite know where to turn. They can say turn to the Lord, and I think this is true. And yet we're so human, we want human help. I just come back from taking a walk this evening thinking if I could just talk with someone. And, of course, you don't talk your problems out with too many people. And so I decided I'd turn the tape recorder on, and you could hear a negative... I'm trying to get a cold. You could hear the negative side of the Davis household, which has been typical in the last few years. Here's Darlene. I could go on, and I know I'm going to stop. Bye-bye, son.
Hi, Art. This week has really been a week, I tell you. Monday afternoon, I went into Mrs. Hare's office, and she told me that I would not be able to take my test because of my debit, which is $500 and some. And that was very upsetting to me, of course. I didn't realize I couldn't take my test for this.
There's no excuse for this, really, other than that I can see for the first time she has money of her own. And it's the little things that she's bought that it seems good to just have money and spend it. And at the first of the year, she really probably didn't work quite as much as she should have. Regardless of what's gone over the dam, she's left with a $500 bill now. And, well, naturally, we brought the problem to Daddy.
First, I talked with Dad about it, and he said he'd see what he could do. Well, he didn't do anything. There just seems to be no understanding at all there. But I guess that's to be expected, being what Daddy's like.
When Darlene found this out from Mrs. Hare, she came home and cried an hour while I was teaching music lessons, and after the lessons I went up and found out what the problem was. Naturally, she realizes her mistake. She's defeated. She doesn't know which way to turn. And I explained this to Art last night, that she had realized that she made mistakes, but goodness knows how many mistakes we've made in life. And as parents, if we could just help her pick up the pieces and somehow put them together again so she wouldn't feel defeated, this would be, you know, so much more rewarding. But I also told him that I felt that we hadn't really helped you children too much with your schooling, and that it seemed to me, and I'm sure you children felt the same way, that there were hundreds of dollars that goes into the basement, and I didn't really think it was right. Well, this he resented very much.
We'll continue with this story from This American Life in a minute. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our story from This American Life, an accidental documentary pulled from a series of tape letters from a family in Michigan to a son in college. At this point, the topic is the family finances and the financial mess the daughter is trying to get out of.
Mom said she thought I ought to help her on this bill, but I don't know whether I'm wrong in this situation or not, but I feel in a way that she sort of had this coming because she hasn't put in her full time. Well, this last month she has, but up until that time, she's agreed for 12 hours a week, and it's been usually around, I imagine 5 to 6 hours is a lot closer to what's actually been accomplished. And then the money she does get, she's been spending on so many incidentals. And I kept talking and talking, but it didn't seem to do much good. But I sort of feel it's better to provide a way for children to earn their education than it is to actually give them the money. And besides, we don't have the money. And if we weren't working down in the basement, why, there wouldn't be any money any more than there is right now. In fact, there wouldn't be as much, so I don't know. I guess I get mixed up in my philosophy and my thinking sometimes, but and I know Darlene sometimes resents the fact that we don't give her more money. She sees all these other folks getting money and she doesn't. I don't know exactly what to do about the situation. I don't know what's really right and what's wrong, but right now I'm pretty strapped with all the taxes. I just had to pay $400 out at the first of the month, and now I come here again and middle of the month, they have to pay another $200.
Just a minute. Back again. Dad just came up to talk to me for a few minutes. I didn't know if I was going to work for him this summer or not after our little mix up here, but I guess I'm going to. I'm going to work at the school, and then the afternoons for Dad, because I have to pay off this debt just as soon as I can.
Well, anyway, be that as it may, Rich told a story. He told about a little mama mouse that lived on the... Oh, there goes. The thing is running downstairs now. I can hear it clicking. Told about a little girl mouse that lived on one side of the field and on one side of the cornfield, and the little boy mouse lived on the other side of the field. And one day, the little girl mouse in the autumn made a trip across the field, and when she got to the little boy's house, she said, "Help, help, I've been reaped, I've been reaped." They were reaping the corn, and old Darlene just laughed and laughed, and she couldn't figure out what she was laughing at. The more she talked, the worse it got. She couldn't get the connection of the whole thing. See, she said she thought it had something to do with emptying garbage or something. I don't remember just what her statement was. Anyway, it really made it quite funny. Her naiveness made it funnier than ever. I'm going to quit for now. I've got some big holes to drill downstairs, and tonight's fugitive night. I haven't watched Fugitive for so many months, I don't know whether he's still afoot or horseback. So much for that. It's really been nice to talk to you, and I want to leave you with one really profound statement, that the more you drill on these castings, the lighter they get. I want you to be sure, if you don't remember anything else, that you remember that. So, son, we love you. We'll see you.
Well, Elise Spiegel on our radio staff did a few days of detective work and tracked down the Davis family, who mailed this tape to their son in medical school in the late 1960s. And we reached the former medical student, Arthur Davis Jr., in his home in Indio, California, not far from Palm Springs. He practices family medicine. He actually makes house calls, he said, and has six kids of his own. And he told us that these letters on tape went back and forth between him and his parents for a period of about 4 years when he was away in California in medical school. He said no, he hadn't heard one since the 1960s. He said no, he had no idea how one could end up in a thrift store in Chicago. No, he said his parents were not still alive. His mother died 12 years ago, and his father died 4 years ago. We sent him uncut tapes of everything that was on the tape, and he heard them, and he said that it was fine with him for us to play the tapes on the radio. He said the tapes captured the dynamics of his family perfectly. The drama of a lot of American families is the emotional distance of the father staying away from the family orbit, the father not being around, the father holding himself apart. And Arthur Davis Jr. says that his father was like a lot of American dads in that way and was, in fact, pretty removed.
He was reared in a divorced home. And there was a lot of bitterness, and so it was pretty tough for him to even consider getting married. And then when I was born, my mom said that he just broke into tears, thinking that he might have to deal with some of those issues as a parent. He never did really want to be a parent. And she really helped him through that a lot.
Hmm.
You know, it was very fascinating, Ira. After my mom died, my dad changed tremendously. And he came to live with me and spent quite a bit of time with my sister and me and was very connected with us and our children. So that all changed after Mom died.